is about comebacks that we like to watch them over and over and over again. That one just happened. I saw it live, and I'm watching it right now, and I know how it's going to end, but it's still just as good as the first time. You know, all the different famous movies and different stories that we've seen, we even keep mementos, try to capture moments when we made a comeback. I brought one of these today. I'm probably the only one that still has one because they're not cool anymore, but the selfie stick, you guys all, I know you don't want to admit it because they're not cool anymore, but most of you guys might have one of these, the selfie stick. And the whole idea of the selfie stick is you have this right here because you want to try to capture a moment, something that's important to you. You want to try to capture it and hang on to it. And again, I'm Robin. I'm the pastor here. Welcome to Eastlake. We say this is a church for everyone because it is. And it's a great place to make a comeback. And today we're going to talk about a story in the Bible. There's a man named Joshua who has to make this huge comeback in life. And he learns a huge lesson about how you make a comeback. And it's the big idea you can write in your notes. Don't forget in the dark what you learned in the light. It's going to be the story of Joshua. Don't forget what you, in the dark, what you learned in the light. And here's how the Bible says it. May God, the source of hope, fill you with joy and peace through your faith in Him. Then you'll overflow with hope. And yet, during a comeback, it can be really difficult to believe that God's for me, wants the best for me, that He's on my side when I need to make a comeback. Now, Joshua's story actually begins with a man named Moses. About 1,000 years before Jesus, there's this person named Moses who's a Jewish person, but he is a slave in Egypt. And his family and all their friends and the whole nation of Israel are slaves in Egypt. And Moses is a part of a slave family. And through a really extraordinary set of circumstances, he ends up being adopted into the Egyptian royal family. The king of Egypt, they call him a pharaoh, adopts Moses. And now he's in royalty, has a completely different life than his family and the slaves and the Jewish people that his heritage is. He has a life of privilege and he grows up in the palace. But as he grows up, Moses is never quite sure about his identity because on the outside he's Egyptian, but on the inside he's a Jewish person. He has identity problems and maybe you can relate. You know, maybe you came from a blended family or your mom got remarried, your dad got married, and everything gets blended up, and you're wondering, you know, like, where do I come from, and who am I? Things seem jumbled up for me. What's my last name, and who are my brothers and sisters? And that's Moses. And it causes for him the same thing that it causes for a lot of us. He gets frustrated. He can't figure it out. He gets angry. And it just keeps boiling over and boiling over and boiling over. And the longer you keep anger compressed and you're frustrated, it just gets, you know, and one day it just gets loose. There's this violent outbreak. And a really destructive thing happens. And it's so bad that Moses decides the best thing for him to do is leave his family, leave his home, and go try to start a life somewhere else. Maybe you have a friend or you know some of your family that had to do that. They just got so bad for them. They thought, oh, I'm out of here. I'm just kidding. So Moses just decides to try to start this entirely different life with different people. All the bridges in his family, his friends, they're all on fire now. He can't go back. He lives somewhere entirely different, Moses. And he gets a job as a shepherd. So he goes from royalty, he lives in the palace, everything's great. Now he's a shepherd living in tents and everything's changed. Nothing's good. And he certainly thinks whatever God had planned for my life, I totally, completely have blown. I mean, do you know you can get so discouraged you don't even dream of a comeback? You're just like, come back. Man, my life is so off course. There's no way I could get, you know, it's 63-3 with 1 second left on the clock. I don't think I'm going to win. You know, that's Moses. And he has this this amazing occurrence. He's out doing his job one day, and God gets his attention by catching a bush on fire. And I don't know, there's lots of different ways God will get someone's attention. With Moses, he catches his bush on fire. And he's looking at this bush on fire, and he's probably very practical, thinking, whoa, it's going to burn up all the bushes. I better get over there and take care of it. And he goes over there, and the bush starts talking to him and says, it's God. Now, maybe, I hope he, you know, I mean, can you imagine? Just or, like, what would you do if you were like at Winco and you were just kind of cruising along doing the family shopping and your shopping cart started talking to you, telling you it was God? Or you're a mechanic, you're underneath the hood, you're doing your job, or whatever it is you do, and then all of a sudden just, you know, Moses. You know, you're like, whoa, did I have a bad night last night? It's like, you know, sometimes God will shock you. It won't even seem like it could, like, do you have a sense of humor, God? A talking, burning bush? Yeah, right. But somehow, God's tried to convince Moses of something. I haven't forgot about you. You didn't totally ruin your life. I'm still into you, and I'm still into your plan. In fact, I still have a purpose for you. Everything was planned out from the very beginning, Moses. I wanted you to be raised by the Pharaoh and be with the king. Everything, this was all supposed to happen this way. And now, this must have been the mind blower, I'm going to send you back to Egypt, and you're going to be the hero. Can you imagine? Of course, everybody that like hits the home run in the bottom of the ninth or hits the winning field goal, they're always the hero. You're going to be the hero, Moses. You're going to lead the comeback. And sure enough, he goes back there. There's lots of movies. You've probably seen the movies. Tons of movies made about it. You know, he goes back and he tells Pharaoh this is how it's going to be. And God does all these things. And sure enough, God decides to release all the Hebrews, all the Israelites are released. And, you know, they go through the Red Sea. There's this amazing thing. And now Moses is the big hero. It's just a crazy story. You've seen it in the movies. And, you know, And as they get closer and closer, now here's the interesting thing, and this is something I want you to hear about God. God just doesn't get him out of a bad situation. He's going to take him to a better situation. So he tells him, he says, I'm going to get you out of slavery. I'm going to give you your own place to live, where you can put roots down, raise your families, and give this great place. He calls it the Promised Land. So if you come today and you say, I am in such a crappy situation, good news, because God just can't get you out of the crappy situation. Probably doesn't talk like that, but I do. But he's going to take you to a better situation. He says that to Moses. It's going to be great. And so, and all the people, they really trust that. And so they're with Moses, and off they go, and they get through the, you know, this amazing thing where they walk through the ocean on the, you know, and they come right to the place where they're going to go into the Promised Land. I mean, they're right there. And they freak out. And they decide it's too difficult, and they give up. It's like the worst story ever. It's like bases loaded, three balls, two strikes, ninth inning, you strike out. You kick the field goal wide left. I thought I was going to get the job. I got down to the last three people interviewed. This was the job of my dreams. I didn't get it. I mean, she looked, her face was ecstatic when she saw the ring, and then she said, I'm going to have to think about it. It was like the worst ending of the story. Now, Joshua, he's Moses' right-hand man, so he has a ringside seat to this whole thing. He sees this whole thing go on. And Moses dies. Joshua gets put in charge. So he's like with all these people that, you know, year after year after year, all they're living is I blew my chance. Is there anything that's happened in your life, and from time to time, this is what comes into your mind, I can't believe I did that. I totally blew my chance. I can't believe it. It's never going to happen again. So that's Joshua and all these people. And then God shows up one day. Says, Joshua, I haven't forgotten you. We're going to make a comeback. But this time the people have to trust me. And it's not easy to do. Give up control to God. What area of your life would you say you have not relinquished trust in yet? Maybe you've got some other areas you're doing really good, but there's just a couple of different areas. You don't trust God in those areas. There's this airplane. It's called the Cessna 150, and a pretty famous airplane. And this particular airplane, the unique thing about it is it was designed in a way that when it goes into a tailspin, if the pilot can let go of the controls, the plane will automatically level itself out and come out of the spin. And part of the training they have to do with the pilots is to get them to let go of the controls. They'll actually put it into a spin and then teach them that they have to let go of the controls so the plane can do what it was designed for. And it is so difficult for them because it's not counterintuitive when things are really bad to let go of control. And God comes and says to Joshua, this time they have to trust me. They have to look at control. I had this little story. I wanted to, just a small one. I wanted to read it to you. A pilot accidentally put a Cessna 150 aircraft into a spin. He panicked and failed to initiate the proper recovery procedures and was saved only when he gave up completely and let go of the controls. True to the design of its safety features, the Cessna stopped spinning on its own, and the pilot was then able to level off the plane 800 feet before the ground. But it's hard, man. They've got their white knuckle in those controls because the plane isn't a spin, and it's like, why would we do it now? And that's when the story of Joshua occurs. Okay? So number one, write in your notes, take a trust step. So Joshua goes to all the people, hears the story, says, great news, God hasn't forgot us. We're going to make a comeback. And they're ready. It's been 40 years, actually, that they've been wondering, is anything ever going to happen for us again? And God comes and says, yes, I haven't forgot you. We're going to get this land. We're going to go in. It's going to happen this time. And all the people are totally excited. They're like, wow, God is going to give us another chance. And everybody gets super excited. And Joshua's going to be the guy. And everything's going to be great. And so they get everybody together. And they start to march towards this land. And they run into the Jordan River right off the bat. And the Jordan River is like a mile long and it's 10 feet deep. I mean, before they even get started, is there anything in your life and you recently and you said, this time I'm going to do it. And before you even get started, this time I'm going to get a, now we're going on a diet today. And the girl in the office says, we're going to the buffet at lunch. You didn't even get started with it. And the obstacle comes up, you know, and here, this is what it is, you know, and they get to this river and it's really a difficult thing because it's their very first problem. And here, please get this. Write this in your notes. Every comeback has a Jordan River. Just jot it in the margins somewhere. Every comeback. Maybe you need to make a financial comeback. A physical comeback. You need a comeback in your marriage. Comeback as a parent. You need to make a comeback. It's critical. Every comeback has a first problem. My wife and I recently bought a house, a new house. And so it's a new house. There's no yard in. The basement's not done. There's all kinds of stuff to be done. It's been amazing to me how differently we are going through this process. Because we moved into the house. My wife, Clarice, has a vision for every part of the house, every piece of the inch of the property. She has a vision for everything of our house. And for me, the house is kind of like a cave. It's shelter. You know, it's like I don't have a huge vision like she does for every single thing in this house, you know. It's like, and I've been listening to her as we go through it, you know. She'll, we're going to do this, or we're going to do that. Of course, I'm like most guys, I just hear cha-ching, 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 you know. It's just like, where's that coming from, you know. So here she tells me this. How about this? Guys, you can relate to this. So no one better give me a look. My wife comes and she says, we're going to get a swimming pool. I'm like, yeah, right. You know, a swimming pool. Are you crazy? But, so I have like 15 stock reasons why no pool. No one has a pool. We don't get pools in these type of places. This isn't the climate for a pool. I mean, nobody would get a swimming pool, babe. Why would we want, I mean, this is like, we can only use it like 2 weeks out of the year and nobody gets a pool in this part of the world, you know? You see any pools anywhere, you know? And my poor wife, you know? So she, you know, she's used to me. She knows, like, you know, I got to stand in there. So she's, the neighbors will come over and everything. I don't want the neighbors over. It's like, why is that good? You know, it's like, but anyway, swimming pool, swimming pool, swimming pool, swimming pool. And I've got all these reasons why no pool, never, not, like, you can't do that, you know. No money and all these things. And one day God said to me, why are you doing that to her? And I was like, so why are you her first problem? He's like, well, I don't want to be anybody's first problem. You know, they're trying to make a comeback and do something in their life. Many ways it is a comeback. We lived here, rented a house, had a house before, another one's come back for us. I said, why are you being her first problem? And maybe you have a first problem in your life. You've told them something you're going to do. You can't do that. Nobody does that. You shouldn't even try that. You'll just fail at that. A lot of times that's what happens. You know, we're going to say, because every single time we try to make a comeback, there is going to be a first problem. And guess what? Sometimes it's people. And they just tell us things about why we can't have this and that, and they're not speaking for God. If you have something like that going on in your life, just know it's going to happen because there's going to be something like that. Now, let me read you this story because it's really interesting. Here's what happens. The Lord tells Joshua, give this command to the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant. You've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. Remember the big thing they cover? You know, they got that. That's what this is, actually. They would drag it around. They'd have this thing with them to remind them that God was with them, Ark of the Covenant. When you reach the banks of the Jordan River, take a few steps into the river and stop there. When the priests who are carrying the ark touch the water with their feet, the river will stop flowing as though held back by a dam and will pile up as though against an invisible wall. The priests who were carrying the ark stood on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan and waited as all the people passed by, while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. Now get Joshua. God comes to him and says, listen, here's how we're going to handle the first problem. I want you to get the leaders and put them up front. By the way, good example of leadership. Give away all the credit, take all the blame. Get out front. Man, you don't need armchair leaders in this world. Do this, do that. If I was you, I'd do this. Like, get off your and do something. You know, my friend used to say she wasn't a cusser. She'd get off your blessed assurance. I always knew she meant another word. But it was like, leaders, get out front. So God designs this. He gets all the leaders out front. Says, get all the leaders out front, and I want them to walk into the river. And as soon as their foot hits the water, it'll stop. Man, what a trust step. It's like, God, couldn't you make it stop like 10 feet before I got there? Or even 5 feet, God? Or at least when I put my foot up in the air, couldn't it start? I mean, can you imagine the guys that are carrying this ark? They each have a pole, and like they're heading towards the water. I'm sure the guys in the back are like, hey, man, you see that water doing anything yet? Is it moving around? Does it look like it's going to, you see anything happening up there? Nah, man, it looks the same as it's been looking, you know? And how about when they, you know, they've got their foot, and they get, and every, can you imagine the intensity? Everybody's watching. You know when you go to make a comeback, there's going to be people watching. And everybody's watching as they've got their foot up in there. Can you imagine the intensity of the moment? Trust step. Now, you know, I'm sure Joshua's like, oh my goodness, the very first problem. But God decides the first problem is the first opportunity to have a trust step. Where do you need to make a transition in your life from doubting God to trusting God? It begins with one trust step. It's a process. God doesn't ask you to become something overnight. It's a step. And that's my finances. It's the way I talk to my husband, or it's the way I talk to my wife, or it's the way I'm parenting, or I have to go to someone and ask them to forgive me because I really wronged them. It's a step. Every transition is a step. We transition to a better place when it comes to trusting God. It's a step. And sure enough, they take it. And they must have been blown away when the water comes all back. And there was two miracles, actually, in this story. One is the water stops. So I mean, that's enough to make you go, okay, we have the point. You know. And but the ground was dry. Now think about it. If you're in that big crowd of people, as you're watching all this happen, you're probably just hoping the water stops. You probably never even thought of the mud. But can you imagine how difficult it would have been for thousands and thousands and thousands of people to have to walk through the mud? And you know, when you take a trust step, sometimes God will do things for you that you never even thought you needed. It never even occurred to you that you were going to need that. You never even thought of dry ground. But God did. See, when you take a trust step with Him, He sees everything you need. Now, number two, don't forget your past trust steps. I'll read all this to you, too. When all the people had crossed the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, now choose 12 men, one from each tribe. Tell them, take 12 stones from the very place where the priests were standing in the middle of the Jordan. Carry them out and pile them up at a place where you'll camp tonight. So Joshua called together the 12 men he had chosen, one from each tribe of Israel. He told them, he's like mayors. All Israel had like little states, and they had these governors or mayors, and these are these guys right here. Called them together, 12 men, one from each tribe. He told them, go into the middle of the Jordan in front of the ark of the Lord your God. Each of you must pick up one stone and carry it on your shoulder. 12 stones in all, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel. We will use these stones to build a memorial. Now, this is the part we've got to catch today. To build a memorial. In the future, when your children ask, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. So they get all the way across the river, and God says, hold on a minute. And I don't know, I mean, how would you feel if God did something ginormous for you, and then he made it clear to you that you could forget that? Maybe, like me, I'd be like, come on, God, I don't think I'm going to forget walking through the river on dry ground. I've got this one. I mean, I know I do some things that aren't right, but I think I'm going to remember going through this river, God. He's like, no, you won't. Because there's going to be new problems and new challenges and new things occur, and you don't want to forget, but you'll fade, and you will. And I care so much about you that I have a way to remind you of how you acted in your last comeback that'll help you in your next comeback. And so he has them go out and get these rocks. And he knows that someday, as they get into this land and they start to take it and they have the new job, or they have the new baby, or you get married, or you have to cut your budget, or whatever it is, and you get into it, and you start to do it, you start to forget. And if you have a memorial, when all the hard times came, I'll bet you they would go back, and you know they could go back and they would say, wait a minute, it was that rock right there. That's not a normal rock. That's the rock. I saw him pick that rock up out of that river. The water was like 10 feet high in the ground. He picked up. I remember that day. And one of the reasons we do baptisms is so you can have a memorial. It's not a ticket into heaven. It's not a way to make God like you more. You don't do it so you can join a church. It's not into those things. Baptism is when you establish a moment, a memorial, that you can return to. Do you know even Jesus got baptized? Before he started any of his ministries, any of the miracles, any of the famous stories that we know about Jesus, before any of that happened, he got baptized. Let me read it to you. It's not in your notes, but I'll read it to you. When Jesus was baptized, as soon as he came out of the water, the sky opened, and he saw God's Spirit coming down on him like a dove. A voice from heaven said, this is my son, daughter, the one I love. I'm very pleased with him. Baptism is a memorial, and that's why we have the bags you can get, and you can decide right in the service, well, I need that. I'm constantly forgetting that God loves me and is pleased with me. That's what baptism is. And you know why God did the rocks, the helpful rocks? Because we pile our own rocks somewhere else of unhelpful rocks and negative rocks. And we return to those memorials time and time again, and they keep us caught in a pattern of defeat. And no one has to teach us to do that. We pile up all our own failures and our mistakes, and we have our own monument that we return to. There's the time I got the DUI right there, and there's my divorce, and there's when I lied. Yep, there they all are. We have our own memorials. And until we stop visiting those and making those, they're very powerful in our lives. One writer put it this way. It's like when the rope is pulled in a bell tower to ring a large bell. When it really gets going, it doesn't just stop when you let go of the rope. It keeps ringing for a while. But over time, it loses its momentum and fades and will stop ringing if we will stop pulling the rope. Memorials. One of the reasons we're going to do the dedication today is a memorial. You have little babies and they're so cute, or your children are so cute, and then they get older and older and they have a mind of their own, and you start wondering what planet they came from. It's like, where did these aliens get in my house? It's like, you know, it's like, and you start to question, are they ever going to be okay? You know, things can happen with your kids that are not as bad as the things you used to do. And you wonder, are they going to be okay? Because you care about them, you're so connected to them. You see, what the dedication is a time to put a stone over on the helpful pile. I remember the day we got everybody at church together. And we said, thanks for these kids, Lord. And we're turning to you. Help us to raise them. It's a memorial. It's a memorial. Here's the bottom line, and write in your notes. God has control of the big picture. Thomas Edison said, many of life's failures are people who did not realize how close they were to success when they gave up. Come back. Building memorials. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. Jeremiah 29:11. This message is from the Lord. I have good plans for you. I don't plan to hurt you. I plan to give you a hope and a good future. Where in your life do you need to make a trust transition? What category?